Fighting for freedom every day. Broadcasting from the heartland of America.
The next generation in conservative talk radio.
This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Yes, indeed it is. What's up? Welcome into it, my friends. It is a middle of the week celebration, a Wednesday. Greatest day of the entire week. Are you recovered? Did you play any adult beverage consumption games last night during the Super Tuesday shenanigans? What a night it was. Ended up staying up late watching a lot of the speeches, watching some of the media lose their minds, man, over what happened last night. And of course, now that we have Super Tuesday, now that Donald Trump is well over 1,000 delegates, now that Nikki Haley has officially dropped out of the race, or, sorry, suspended her campaign, technically, we're seeing the endorsements finally roll in. A lot of people having their last-minute holdouts as long as they possibly could until they had to endorse Donald Trump, and now they realize they've proven it again, and they did it in very strong fashion last night, that this is, right now at least, a Donald Trump Republican Party, a MAGA Republican Party. The establishment's not welcome any longer. The moderates are working their way out. We have no more in leadership on the Republican side that are fighting against the Donald Trump regime or the MAGA movement, and therefore, we're seeing the curving, the evolution of the Republican Party. A lot of people are upset about it. There's not a lot of moderates any longer. Look at some of the moderates like Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, Mitt Romney. And there's a few that are lingering, but none of them in leadership positions and none of them that are still balking against Donald Trump, which means now it's time for a united Republican Party. Will we see that? Probably not. Probably not. That would be my guess, but we'll get into all that here on the program and so much more. Welcome into it. It is The Voice Reason. I am Andy Hoosier. So great to have you along for the ride. Congressman Bob Latta from the 5th District of Ohio. We get usually about a monthly update from him. We'll have him on the program in just a little bit. It is a two-parter. We sat down with him just a little bit ago, talking about the appropriation bills, what's going on in Washington, D.C., and we did touch on the Super Tuesday elections, uniting of the Republican Party, and more in the conversation. So we'll play that coming up in just a little bit. Obviously, the big news of the day.
What's trending today?
Not only is the Super Tuesday numbers, which we'll break down vaguely, but the announcement that came shortly after early on this morning.
I am filled with the gratitude for the outpouring of support we've received from all across our great country. But the time has now come to suspend my campaign. I said I wanted Americans to have their voices heard. I have done that. I have no regrets. And although I will no longer be a candidate, I will not stop using my voice for the things I believe in.
All right, that was her announcement earlier today, which it was pretty short, sweet, and simple, roughly only like 8 minutes long. She got in, said her thing, and got out, and there it is. Boom, done. Now, the big issue, of course, was the fact that she did not make an official endorsement for Donald Trump thereafter. Now, normally, you don't have to. But normally, if you care more about the party than you do your own personal vendettas, normally you would make an endorsement of whoever's going to be the front runner. And now that Donald Trump is by kind of the de facto candidate for the Republican Party, and by a long shot, by the way, looking at some of these numbers across the different states, Trump won Alabama by a 70-point margin, Alaska 76-point margin, Maine, for crying out loud, 47-point margin, Massachusetts 23 points, Oklahoma, we got a lot of listeners down there, 66-point margin. Down there, Minnesota, a 40-point margin. North Carolina, 51 points. Tennessee by 58 points. Virginia, 28 points. Texas by 60. Arkansas by 58. And let's see, Utah really was the smallest margin at 15-point margin there. California, a 61-point margin for the Republicans there. Now, again, that's under the mindset that Nikki Haley was the alternative to the evil, horrible, crazy populist Trump. That's going to be taking over the party, that's going to stop any elections thereafter, that's going to whatever. A lot of these states, 11 of them, obviously, had open primaries where Democrats could have jumped into the race and actually voted for Donald Trump or voted for Nikki Haley. And I don't think they voted for Donald Trump, just throwing that one out there. They can't get themselves to pull the lever for that one. They wanted Nikki Haley to stay in to keep this battle going. And even with that, out of 15 states, she won one, which was the state of Vermont, which she won by a 4-point margin. So that shows right now the power that Donald Trump has in this party. This morning, we've also seen the endorsements from Mitch McConnell, where he said that it's time to work together and unite the party. Even Tennessee Governor Bill Lee, which kind of a day late and a dollar short, thanks a lot. But after their primary last night, also has come out today endorsing Donald Trump, saying that we need to find unity within the Republican Party. Out of all these, the one endorsement that we didn't get, however, was Nikki Haley.
In all likelihood, Donald Trump will be the Republican nominee when our party convention meets in July. I congratulate him and wish him well. I wish anyone well who would be America's president. Our country is too precious to let our differences divide us. I have always been...
Hold on. Let's stop it right there for a second. It's too precious for our differences to divide us. You would think that it'd be like, this is more important than ever before. That the other side of the aisle, they're nuts, they're radical, they're taking over the country. They say that Donald Trump's the authoritarian, yet they're using the weaponization of our CIA and FBI to go after us. They're silencing us on social media. They're social banning us and not allowing us to get our content out there. They're trying to literally arrest journalists for just doing their job. They're trying to remove someone off a ballot illegally and then have even talked about dissolving the Supreme Court after that decision. Like, these people are absolutely nuts. We cannot allow them to get into power for another 4 years. We need to get behind who is going to be our de facto candidate for the Republican side, which is going to be Donald Trump. That should be what comes thereafter, that remark that she just made. Not though.
I have always been a conservative Republican and always supported the Republican nominee. But on this question, as she did on so many others, Margaret Thatcher provided some good advice when she said, quote, never just follow the crowd. Always make up your own mind.
So I usually endorse and support the Republican candidate, but you, I'm just going to let you dry in the wind. Now, obviously, she doesn't have a lot of supporters. I mean, according to there's a headline from Drudge Report right now that shows the number of votes that each one of them got. And according to Drudge, it said Trump received on Super Tuesday 1.5 million votes overall. Haley received 763,000 votes, which we'll get to the significance of those numbers in just a moment, but it shows that there's a portion of the Republican Party that voted for Nikki Haley. And for a way to unify the party, it would say even if you don't necessarily care for the guy, his policies are better than Biden's policies. Therefore, this is a very easy shut, close case and that we should be supporting them. But to her, they say, no, we're just going to go our own path here. And sorry, but I have to think for myself on this one, meaning you ain't getting my endorsement.
It is now up to Donald Trump to earn the votes of those in our party and beyond it who did not support him. And I hope he does that. At its best, politics is about bringing people into your cause, not turning them away. And our conservative cause badly needs more people.
So we need more people. We need to unify it, but you're going to have to win them over. I'm not going to encourage my supporters to go vote for you because I'm not going to be part of that unification. You have to do it yourself. So talking out of both sides of her mouth, we have to tell you, Nikki Haley, our proper fellow here on the program. Because you didn't really help the Republican cause at all. So now the big question is, yes, how do we win over more of the Republican Party? How do we win over more of these? Most voters are starting to get on board and just come to that acceptance. That's why Mitch McConnell, who was an ardent non-supporter of Donald Trump, is coming on board and wanting to support him, recognizing the fact. And it was a weird statement because I've said before that Mitch McConnell loves playing defense. He loves being in the minority to say, well, I can't really do anything because I don't have the numbers. Like, that's been his whole motto, is the Senate minority leader, is because he doesn't like to lead as the majority leader because he doesn't know how to actually lead. He just wants to be the guy saying, well, I'm a victim. I can't do anything because I don't have the power to do so because I'm in the minority. But his statement was intriguing this time, saying that he supported Donald Trump and how he's ready to play offense instead of actually play defense, which I find kind of unique. Then we have the Tennessee Governor Bill Lee that's made his statement as well, talking about the importance, saying, quote, Republican voters in Tennessee and across the country have made their voices heard. President Trump is the clear choice to take our conservative principles to the American people, and I wholeheartedly offer him my full support, he said in the statement again earlier today after the primary from the state of Tennessee. But he wanted to be sure. So the bandwagon fans are beginning to come on board, which is fine. That's what we need. But we have to find a way to unify the Republican Party in its best way. And I think that we can. But I want to go back to the numbers for just a moment, because at the end of the day, what matters on a presidential election? Is it the number of votes? Is it that popular vote? No, it is not. It is the Electoral College, and it's the amount of electoral votes that you have, which according to, let's see, now we are sitting at Donald Trump sitting just over 1,000 at 1,025. Nikki Haley sitting at 89 Electoral College's votes after the numbers last night. Trump receiving 1.5 million votes, Haley at 763,000 votes, so about half of the Donald Trump votes there, which I find interesting. But at the end of the day, I would like to remind you as conservatives that we need to get away from this rhetoric about how many votes actually happen. The number of votes essentially does not matter. It's where they're actually placed. And for a headline for this to be on Drudge Report showing Trump at 1.5 million, Haley at 763,000, it shows two things. Number one, it does show that there is a portion of the Republican Party that needs to be won over. And we can have that conversation on how to win them over. And I think Donald Trump can do a job of that. Watching his statement last night after the victory, his tone is completely different. Yes, he is a vicious personal fighter. He gets down and dirty and goes after anybody that challenges him. He does that, and it's very off-putting for many in the Republican Party. Totally get it. Understand that. That is the New York in him. If you've ever talked to a New Yorker, anybody from the East Coast, that's what they do. It's not personal to them, but he goes after the personal attacks. He did it with Ted Cruz's wife. He did it with Nikki Haley's husband. He did it with Lion Ted. He did it with Ron DeSantis. He did it with everybody that goes against him. Now afterwards, and he's won, it's not personal. He congratulates them. He praises them. He thanks them for what they've done. He calls them a great, true fighter. That's just the way Donald Trump operates. And some people can't handle that. It's very personal to them. And they get very upset, which is why Nikki Haley's not endorsing someone like Donald Trump. But if you listen to Trump's speech last night, it was a very different tone. It was very quiet. It was almost like a whisper. And I think that was because maybe the acoustics in Mar-a-Lago. But he kind of whispered. He just kind of ran through the entire speech. It wasn't a long, drawn-out thing. It wasn't really a big rally to get excited about. It was very calm, which I think is going to help win over some people. Plus, the whole vice presidential pick that he's going to have could win some people over as well on the Republican side. But at the end of the day, I'm here to remind you that conservatives and Republicans need to start changing the narrative and need to start changing the conversation. While we see the 763,000 votes Haley got as an opportunity to find a way to win them over for Donald Trump and the Republicans, at the end of the day, it's about delegates. The same as it's going to be in November for the general election. It's about delegates. It's not about the popular vote. And that's why Haley may have gotten, or Trump may have doubled the amount of votes that Nikki Haley got, but that's why he received 700 delegates and she 752 and she received 46 because of the location that they're at and the significance of an electoral college. It doesn't matter about the popular vote. And this is what the media tries to hype to us. This is what the Democrats try to tell us, that look at all these Democrats that show up to vote. Look at all the stuff that happens with the popular vote. Popular vote means absolutely nothing. It is the Electoral College and the number of delegates. And we have to remind ourselves that, and we have to start changing the conversation to reflect that, so that way people get familiarized with hearing about delegate count, not popular vote numbers. And while it's important for us internally, we have to start talking about it outwardly so that way people understand it, because they don't. And that's why we see the national popular vote movement happening right now and more states joining on board, where if enough states join it, it won't matter what we do for the Republican presidential primaries, because a Republican president will never get elected again, because New York and L.A. and a few of these other big cities will be dominating every election from there on out, and we can't let that happen. Lots more coming up. Stay here.
This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. Fighting for freedom every day. This is the Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Yes, indeed it is. Welcome back into it. Fascinating stuff that we saw yesterday throughout the Super Tuesday primaries in 15 different states across the nation. Donald Trump almost sweeping all of it, 14 out of 15 states. Not bad, not bad. Then we had Joe Biden actually lose, like, what was it, the District of Samoa or something? Something ridiculous, which was hilarious. The media watching that, they didn't even have a picture for the guy, so don't even know who it is, but he ended up losing that one. That's how badly people are detesting Joe Biden. While we're seeing unity begin to happen on the Republican side for Donald Trump, we're seeing the dismantling of unity on the Democrat side, which is definitely going to play in our favor. I told you yesterday that one of the states to really pay attention to, and not for the Republican side, but for the Democrat side, was the state of Minnesota. And because of the individuals, the Jewish community, the Muslim communities, especially in Minnesota, that have a high population, that have said they are refusing to vote for Joe Biden in this race because of his stance on supporting Israel, and of course the Jewish community that's saying that he's not supporting them enough. So the quagmire that he's in trying to win over these voters, he's losing demographics left and right, and this is one of the biggest ones right now that's very upset with Joe Biden. Well, it really didn't surprise us when we saw that, according to the New York Times, that there were 45,000 Democrats, or roughly just about 19% of the vote, on the Democrat side in the state of Minnesota that voted uncommitted. Meaning they didn't vote for Joe Biden, and they didn't vote for Dean Phillips, the other candidate that got about 18,000 votes. Uncommitted, 45,000. 19% of the vote on the Democrat side choose not to vote for Joe Biden. If that's going to be a big issue in Minnesota and Michigan, guess what? Then the rumor, the tweets that we heard behind the scenes that Donald Trump was actually in play in these states is very accurate. And unless he actually gets his, you know what, together, meaning Joe Biden, to win back over these voters, he's going to lose these states, because that is a chunk of change right there. 19% of the voter turnout. Now, obviously, if it goes into the general election, the voter turnout for these presidential primaries still relatively low than what we're going to see in the general. So if it's already 19% now, then what's it going to be in election day? Because they could have just stayed home. They didn't even have to show up yesterday. Joe Biden obviously was going to get the vote. He was going to get the nomination in Minnesota and every other state except for this district of Samoa or whatever that was, where he ended up losing. Hilarious to watch. But they didn't even have to show up. They're so angry at him that they specifically showed up in the groves by 45, over 45,000, almost 46,000, 45,900, to show up to specifically vote uncommitted, and that they don't want Joe Biden to be president or the nominee for the Democrat side because they're angry at him. That's a statement. That's not just unsure. That's a bold statement of anti-Joe Biden. And if that's the show up, then however many you're going to show up in November after that to make their statement as well, unless he actually starts changing his tone quite a bit. So Democrats are in a bit of a shamble right now. They're panicky. They're panicking right now, which is why Karine Jean-Pierre today probably got a little testy when the media was asking about why he uses so many note cards to actually respond to people during Q&A sessions.
At the border, when he was doing his briefing there, he also had note cards last Friday with the Italian Prime Minister. Why does the president rely so heavily on note cards?
You're upset because the president has note cards? You're asking me a question about the president having note cards?
I'm asking why.
The president who has had a... probably one of the most successful first 3 years of an administration than any modern day president. He's done more in the first 3 years than most presidents who had two terms. Mm-hmm. You're asking me about note cards? I'm not speaking to you right now, James. I'm talking to your friend over here, Ed. So thank you so much. But thank you so much for interjecting.
Wow. Yeah. See the grumpiness between her that's freaking out, starting to get a little snippy. We have Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez getting a little snippy with her constituents that are upset about her and her stance with Palestine, saying that we need to go be bolder about the genocide of the Palestinians and going after Israel, being more anti-Semitic than what she needs to be. I'm sensing a little bit of desperation. I'm sensing a little bit of grumpiness on the other side of the aisle. They're losing ground. They're falling apart. And when you start falling apart, you get panicky. And when you get panicky, you fall apart even more. And we're watching that right now. Lots more coming up.
The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. When Reason meets radio, this is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Welcome back into the program. Always great to have you along for the ride. Really happy to have our next guest back on the program. Been a little bit since we've chatted with him as we move out to the great state of Ohio for the 5th Congressional District for the state of Ohio. We have Congressman Bob Latta back on the line with us here. Congressman, how are you, my friend?
Great. Thanks very much for having me on.
Yeah, always good to chat with you. There's a lot going on, obviously. We had Super Tuesday yesterday. We have a State of the Union that's coming up tomorrow. We have the appropriation bills that you guys are working on and debating and potentially voting on here in the next week or so. It's a crazy time in politics right now, but with you guys in Washington, D.C., Right now, obviously, the big focus has been working on appropriations, trying to fine-tune these bills and do an actual vote. Do you expect us to actually have something go through here in the next week?
Yeah, I think so, because they want to get this first one done, because what they did, we have 6 of the 12 appropriation bills up this week. And so, you know, we're looking at the ag appropriations. This is not the ag bill, but this is just on their appropriation side. There's what they call military construction and veterans affairs. There's water and energy and water. And there's what they call THUD, which is transportation, housing, and urban development. And there's an interior. And there's also what they have for commerce, justice, and science. So that's the first tranche that will be coming up this week.
That's a good long list. Now, I know that a lot of these appropriation bills were originally passed out of the House before the holidays. November, December is when you guys were working on those as soon as we got the newly elected Speaker Mike Johnson back then. And they seem like they were relatively decent bills. We had some nice cuts in there. We had some consolidation of programs. We had some, I guess we could say, reforms when it comes to some of our budgetary issues. Are they the same bills, and do they look similar, or have they been altered quite a bit since the Senate took a hold of some of those and tried to tweak them since the Democrats run that side and they said that they were essentially dead on arrival?
Well, what you're looking at, of course, it's kind of 2-1. It's the Senate and the White House against us to get these things done. But I do know that in our meeting last night, in our whip team meeting, that as they went over some of them, there are some substantial cuts out there. I know that, especially on the EPA side, that, you know, we, not one of our favorite departments around here. There's a pretty sizable cut on EPA over their current spending. You know, FBI, there's about a 6% cut. They've got about a 95% cut on their construction budget alone.
Wow.
And then the alcohol, tobacco, and firearms budget's been cut by about 7%. Now, at the same time, because of we've seen on the drugs flowing across the southern border, especially fentanyl that killed 73,000 people last year, that there's some additional funding there to help DEA to help try to stop on the drugs coming across. But, you know, I think that, as I mentioned, I think EPA's budget's cut about 10%. And, you know, there's also, we want to make sure that on our military construction, especially on the Veterans Affairs, that we're helping our veterans out there. But also, there's a provision in there that preserves the veterans' Second Amendment rights. Because in some cases, you know, veterans are afraid to say anything if they all of a sudden they might find that someone's trying to take their firearms away from them.
Yeah.
So that I know that there's protection there. You know, this is what you always have to look at. Is this bill perfect? No. And I'm looking at it right now because it's pretty sizable. And so I'm reviewing it right now. But, you know, some of the top things that are in there, it's good that, you know, we're doing some of these things because, you know, you and I have talked in the past. And since we have talked in the past, the latest number coming from the Congressional Budget Office now says that we're going to pay $870 billion just to pay the interest on the debt this year.
Yeah,
and I mean, they're not paying it down. This is pay the interest on it. And just 2 years ago, they thought we were going to pay only at that time $272 billion, which turned out to be $475 billion. So these numbers keep changing because what we have to, you know, when you see this massive debt clock going on out there, and the amount of money that we're paying just on interest, this will become the second highest line item we have. It'll be Social Security, then it'll be interest payment, then Medicare, then defense.
Wow.
And if anybody doesn't think this isn't sustainable, what's happening out there, this thing is absolutely a disaster. It's coming right at us. And I have no idea. First of all, we're going to come up with $870 billion this year, but in less than 2 years, we're going to come up with $1 trillion just to pay the interest on the debt.
Yeah, that's insane. That's not sustainable, and we have to find a way to start cutting these. So it's good you guys are working on it. I like you said, you know, it's still a little high from what I'm sure a lot of Republicans and conservatives would like, but at the same time, having an actual appropriations bill being passed and actually having somewhat of a federal budget passed, which we haven't really seen since the Barack Obama administration or even the Bush administration, is a step in the right direction, I guess. So, you know, that's at least good news. You threw a lot out there. Let's talk real quickly about the EPA, because I think the EPA is way overfunded and we could see them downsize quite dramatically. I know one of the appropriation bills
that was originally passed included the repealing of the Waters of the U.S. rule to where the EPA can't regulate some of these waters. Is that still in the bill, do you know?
You know, that's something I need to check because that is so important for my district, especially my home county. My home county of Wood in Northwest Ohio has the largest number of miles of ditch in it. We have over 3,000 miles of ditch just to drain our county because it's in the middle of what they call the old Great Black Swamp, which was used to be the lake bed of Lake Erie. And, you know, if you would go in there, and I was a county commissioner for 6 years, and I was responsible for these hearings. If you get the EPA involved and the Corps of Engineer in ditch projects, we will never get another ditch done in this country, which means farmers' drainage would just, you know, disappear, and all of a sudden, you know, the land would just become worthless.
Yeah.
You couldn't farm it. So, you know, this is something that we've been working on, but that's an area I'm going to have to double check to make sure that we've got the protections in there to prevent the EPA and the Corps from getting in on our project, because as I said, you would never get another ditch cleaned in this country.
On the IRS front, I know that you had mentioned that we're cutting near 95% of the construction of new building, at least construction portions. Does that include cutting as well that growth of the near 88,000 IRS employees that the Democrats have tried to push for the last couple of years?
Well, on the 6%, that 654 was millions on the FBI. Now, what we've done, again, when we passed our Israeli package, we took the money from that massive amount that the Democrats have put in there. So I think right now that's another area that we have to double-check because, again, supplemental funding for Ukraine and for Israel, those are still out there.
Yeah.
Those aren't being handled at this time in this first six bills because those don't pertain. So it'll be the when they bring up the next six bills, I think they've heard this and talk about what they might have and might not have there. But those bills, we still haven't even seen that language yet.
So we're talking with Congressman Bob Latta from the 5th District of Ohio. Let's shift gears just briefly here. And I know you talked about a bill and presented it because you guys have actually been talking about this again up in committee all over, was the concern of China, the concern of social media, the concern of gathering information. And you've actually presented a bill to actually ban TikTok across the United States. Talk about what you've been working on here.
Well, when we had Mr. Chu before us, who was from TikTok last year before us in committee, you know, the questions were going back and forth. I finally asked him a very simple question. I asked him, does ByteDance, which is the parent of TikTok, do ByteDance employees in China, which would include their engineers, have access to user data? And yeah, he had to admit that they do, because in communist China, if you're a communist Chinese company, you have to cooperate with the government and give them anything that they want. So when you think about all the data that they collect, and we sat through some top secret hearing meetings about this, that you know it's today that there's legislation that's going to be out there to ban TikTok. I know in the Energy and Commerce Committee, of which I serve, is where this bill will be coming through. We'll be having a hearing and then what we call a markup this week on it. Because, again, a lot of people just don't realize what it is with TikTok, what makes it so dangerous. And we're not just saying we're banning TikTok, because this pertains to what we call adversaries. That's communist China, Russia, Iran, and North Korea. And what we're saying is, look, TikTok can still exist, but it can't be owned by anything that's connected to communist China. So if they would divest, then they've got a clear path to being able to stay in operation in the United States. India, which of course is the largest country in the world of population, has already banned TikTok. And because it's just absolutely a company out there that is extremely dangerous to the United States. And the amount of information that they're getting from Americans, that we want to make sure that we protect Americans. And this is a company that the communist Chinese have got so embedded into this country that a lot of people don't realize the risk that's out there.
There it is. That's Congressman Bob Latta from the 5th District of Ohio. We'll continue that conversation with him after the break here in just a moment. We've got to take a hard break with us here on the show. But interesting conversation, especially being the one to put up a bill to ban TikTok here across the nation. I have reiterated on this program many times that if we are concerned about the collection of data, especially from a communist nation like China, we should also probably be somewhat concerned about the collection of our data here in the United States as well, from Google and from YouTube and from Facebook and from all these other social media sites and online websites to collect our data on a regular basis. The metadata collection of our cell phones, the collection of our GPS data on our cell phones when we're traveling around the country, that we're getting that data collected as well from a government who's calling us domestic terrorists and the most radical political organization, meaning MAGA, in the country. I'm a little more concerned about that than I am about China for this moment. Not that they're not a threat, but that ours right now is more of an immediate threat, to put it that way. Lots more coming up. Stay here.
This is The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier. Fighting for freedom every day. The Voice of Reason with Andy Hoosier.
Yes, indeed. That's what we do here on the program each and every day for a midweek celebration. By the way, tomorrow is the State of the Union. We're going to break some of that down tomorrow. That'll be fun. Get ready for your adult beverage game on that one. Yeah. Yeah, that'll be a good time. But for right now, we continue our conversation with Congressman Bob Latta. He's with the 5th District of Ohio. As we talked about some of the legislation, the appropriation bills going on in Washington, D.C., we cover a little bit more of that. Plus, we talk about the unity of the Republican Party, Super Tuesday that happened last night, and more as we continue that conversation.
I do want to touch on real quickly the State of the Union coming up tomorrow. Joe Biden set to speak. I don't know if he's presented his official budget proposal, which presidents normally do going into a State of the Union. But what do you expect to hear at this speech tomorrow night? And do you think it's really going to go anywhere?
Well, first, I don't think it's going to go anywhere because, again, the president, and I'm not one that sits there and reads these polls all day, but the best poll I always say is just go out in your district and talk to people.
Yeah.
And when the president talks about, inflation's under control, things are great, put your rose-colored glasses back on. And it's just like, for instance, at Christmas when I was back in the district, I was in the grocery store in the cereal aisle, and just by chance, there were four different families who probably didn't know each other, all talking about what? The price of cereal, yeah. Price of bread. Everything's going up, and this president is not doing anything about it, as well as doing absolutely nothing on the border. So I think that, all we're going to hear is about 90 minutes of how great things are, and the American people say, I don't believe any of it.
Yeah, I don't believe I don't think that anybody's going to buy into this stuff. I mean, right now he's on the campaign trail talking about his, quote, investing in America progress over the past few years. But people don't care how much money you've sunk into the Environmental Protection Agency, for an example, when your food's up 30%. Like, people want their gas low. They want their food affordable. They want their housing decently affordable. And right now we don't see any of that stuff. So I don't really care how much he's actually invested in government programs because it's not helping anybody right now.
Well, and I really believe that this election cycle is all going to be about your wallet. And Americans are going to ask themselves, do I have more money in my wallet today than I did when Joe Biden became president, or less? And I think Americans are going to say, you know what? I've got less.
Yeah.
And when you think about the crime that are on our streets, when you think about all the international issues that are going on, that they're going to say, you know what? The world's not safe, is not as safe as it was. And this president has not done a good job. And I really think, as I said, that the president's going to try to tout all the great things that he's going to say he did, but the American people know better.
Yeah, because of how difficult that they're really pushing this and trying to lie to people about the economy and how we need to be focusing our attentions on that. Last night after Super Tuesday, we essentially had a walkaway win for former President Donald Trump and all the states except for Vermont, becoming essentially the de facto candidate for the Republican side. Is it time, do you think, for the Republicans to unite and actually start focusing on general election mindsets right now when it comes to the campaign trail?
Well, I think that when you look at how fast this year is going by, and when November 5th is going to be here, that the American people want to know how you're going to make this country better, how you make this country safer, and making sure that we stop this flow on the southern border, we stop the flow of the drugs, and make families wanting to know that the next generation is going to have a better life than currently. But right now, it's being said for the first time in American history that people are saying that no, our kids are not going to have a better life than we had. So this is what the American people want to hear, and how it's going to get resolved.
We got a lot of work to do, and I know you guys are on the front line of that, working on the appropriation and budgetary issues now. Hopefully we can see some decent gains and actually see some progress with some nice cuts and getting us back on track economically. It's Congressman Bob Latta from the 5th District of Ohio. Congressman, always a pleasure to talk to you, my friend. Keep up the fight in D.C. We'll get you back on and talk again real soon.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
There it is, Congressman Bob Latta, again, the 5th District of Ohio. Always a pleasure to have him on. We do that, about every month or so to get him on the show. And the appropriations bills, probably the top priority, at least for Congress, over the next week or so. I'm still curious on where the Ukrainian funding, Israeli funding is going to fall in line with these appropriation bills, how they've been tweaked, and are we still going to see some of the major cuts that we were pushing for oh so hard and that passed originally in the House of Representatives before the holidays, and how much they've been tweaked since then. At the end of the day, when was the last time we actually passed any appropriations bills? So I guess we're moving in the right direction, maybe not as quickly as we'd like, and we don't have time to wait a whole lot longer, but at least it's something, which is better than nothing. We'll see what happens over the next week or so. Elections, man, that's all focus right now. And of course, the State of the Union tomorrow, which we'll break down here on the program. Until then, be your own voice of reason. Be that catalyst for change. Let's unite. Let's find a way to unite this Republican Party. Those never Trumpers that are out there, what will it take for you to be won over and stop Joe Biden from being back in the White House? That's the question I have for you. Until then, this is the Voice of Reason. I'm Andy Hoosier. We'll see you on the radio. Bye.